What can the Philippines do to protect its interests in the West Philippine Sea? Here's part two of my conversation with former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. Why is China so intent on expanding their territory at other nations' expense and at the expense of China's own reputation? Ano ba yung big picture dito, Justice? I mean, China is also risking a lot, no, by doing all of this, no? Parang they are offending us, offending, threatening many other countries. They feel threatened by China's actions. Bakit ba ginagawa ito ng China in the first place?
Well, because the present leadership in China are imperialistic. They said they will recover everything that China lost during the century of humiliation. But they never possessed the South China Sea. Because if you look at all the ancient maps of China, throughout the Chinese dynasties, their southernmost territory in the South China Sea was Hainan. It never went further south than Hainan. So they're using their historical claim, but their historical claim in the South China Sea is totally false. But why do they do this? Because they are acting as an imperialist power. They want to control the South China Sea, to own it as their national territory, which is against international law, against UNCLOS, against history. I mean, no country can now claim an entire sea. That's just out of this world. That's outlandish, absurd. But China still says, oh, we own the South China Sea since 2,000 years ago. Nobody believes that. That has been debunked by the tribunal. There's no evidence, historical evidence of that. But why is China doing this? Because Chinese leaders are greedy. They want to get all the natural resources in the South China Sea for themselves. It's out of greed. Imperialism is the manifestation of greed, national greed. And it's because of this greed by the Chinese leaders. They want to deprive everybody else. They want to get it. But they're getting, let's say, in the South China Sea, you have high seas. The high seas belong to the global commons. It belongs to all mankind. It belongs to Nepal. It belongs to Switzerland, landlocked countries. But they still ignore that. They want to get the high seas, which belongs to all mankind. So you have to have that frame of mind where you totally disregard the legal order, international legal order. You disregard all kinds of morality. You disregard the common good because you just want everything for yourself. That's greed. That's the manifestation. That's what is driving imperialism. And that is in the DNA of the present leaders of China.
But isn't there also somewhere a genuine fear of America? Because America is knocking on their door, basically, by having a presence in their part of the world. Wala naman Chinese Navy na umiikot sa California siguro or sa New York, no? Hindi tulad ng American Navy with nuclear weapons moving around China, a country as large as China that has had a colonial history as well and having been occupied and, you know, conquered by foreign powers. I mean, isn't that part of their calculation? You know, aside from desiring, you know, natural resources that belong to others or belong to the international community, hindi ba may perception din sa kanila na, you know, there's a superpower moving around in our neighborhood and we need to protect ourselves from them?
That is why China has offered the U.S. Let's divide the world. The world's too big for both of us. We can divide it. So leave to us the South China Sea. That's ours. And the rest will be yours. So they know that. Of course, the U.S. Would not want to do that because they would be abandoning their traditional allies and they will lose credibility. But that's why I'm saying, who knows? Trump might become the president next time and he will say, okay, I accept the offer of China. We divide the world. You take care of your sphere of influence will be the South China Sea. And that could happen. That's why I'm saying, we should prepare for that day. We should now engage our ASEAN neighbors, Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, that, you know, at the end of the day, it might be just ourselves trying to defend what's ours here in the South China Sea because the two superpowers might come to an agreement. And that will just leave us on our own to defend our maritime zone. So let us do it now. Let's conduct naval drills jointly to protect, to fortify our defenses. And that is why I say we have to develop our military capability, because at the end of the day, we can only rely on ourselves, really. And you look at history, countries that failed to develop a credible self-defense force were eaten up, were absorbed by their stronger neighbors. And we have to be prepared for that. We cannot rely forever on the U.S. because their policy could change. I mean, they could get tired of defending others. You may have a Trump there who will just say, okay, let's just divide the world. And there's a danger that he could also be the next president. So we have to prepare for that. I mean, yes, we are allies now, but their national interests could change. That's why it's important we must develop our military defenses. We must have a credible self-defense force, and we're far from that. There is no free lunch in this world. If you don't put up your defenses, you don't fortify your defenses, then you will be erased from the map. That has happened to many countries, and it could happen to us if we don't develop a credible self-defense force.
Okay, Justice Carpio, in a previous era, we challenged China in the international tribunal, and the Philippines won, no? And then the Duterte administration that came after that, after the Aquino administration, which challenged China, reversed course and decided to be friendlier towards China. Yun ang strategy nila. Perhaps thinking that, you know, Philippines will somehow benefit from that kind of stance or policy towards China. But so looking back now, Justice, no? Did the Duterte administration's policy of friendship towards China help the Philippine cause? What did we gain or lose? And how would the situation be different if President Duterte continued the policies of the Aquino administration?
Well, we didn't gain anything. We were taken for a ride by China. China promised us 22 to 24 billion in loans and investments. That never materialized. Only less than 3-4% of that materialized. And that's nothing compared to the lost years, 6 years. We didn't do anything. We allowed China to fish in our exclusive economic zone against the express provision of the Constitution. We did not do anything to fortify our claim. We're doing that now. We're having joint patrols with all other countries, with many countries. But that was really a terrible period. I mean, it was a nightmare for us who were trying to defend the country, because you have the president who was just being fooled by China. And it was very obvious that the goal of China is to get the South China Sea within the 9, now 10 dash line. That's very clear. I mean, to any average person, that's very clear. But here is a president who said, oh, China is our friend. I love Xi Jinping. So it was a terrible time, really. It was a terrible time.
Okay, Justice, another issue. I just want to pivot a little bit. No, before we end, I want to ask you your thoughts on the moves to change our constitution. I know you've been speaking out about this as well. No, any latest thoughts nyo, about this? Is there a need to do this?
Well, first, the reason, ostensible reason that they're saying, telling all of us, is that we need to change the economic provisions of the constitution to increase the foreign direct investment. Because without foreign direct investment, the unemployment will remain high. The economic growth will be slow. Okay, let's look at that. We have already opened the economy under the latest amended Public Service Act. No? We opened transportation, airlines, sea transportation, and land transportation, except for POVs, individual jeepney drivers. No? We have opened, even before banking, 200% foreign ownership, we have opened retail trade. We require only 10 million per store. That's very low. We have opened power generation for wind, for solar, for tidal, for hydro, for thermal. We have opened practically everything already. There are about four or five items that we have not opened up. But as far as our neighbors are concerned, we are there among the most liberalized countries in terms of foreign investments. We have the most liberal foreign investments laws now. But still, our foreign direct investment is low. Why? Because the causes of our low foreign direct investment are, one, high power rate. The foreign nationals come to Asia, ASEAN, to put up plants, to manufacture. And the power involves their manufacturing plants uses a lot of power. The plants use a lot of power, and it can be anywhere from 20 to 60% of your operating cost. If they locate there, they cannot compete with their competitor or establish a plant in Vietnam or China, whose power rates are very low. So that's really one of the factors of why our FDI is low. Second is that we are too bureaucratic. To open a plant, you have to go to the barangay to get a locational clearance. You have to go to the municipality to get the mayor's permit and all others. You have to go to the executive department that has jurisdiction over you. It could be the Department of Health if you're manufacturing medicine. Then you could go, you have to go to specialized agencies that have also jurisdiction. So compared to Vietnam and China, you just go to one office. You get all your permits there. So in terms of bureaucracy, we're too bureaucratic. I mean, it's a nightmare for foreign investors to get all the permits in the Philippines. The third is that our infrastructure is behind compared to our ASEAN neighbors. You can just go to our airports and you can see that our airports are not on par with them. Even our internet, quite slow still, although we're improving. And the roads, seaports, we have to improve. We have really to invest to improve our infrastructure. So we have to address the real causes. The Constitution has nothing to do. Because if you go to China, you go to Vietnam, their citizens cannot even own land because the state owns everything. Their citizens can only have 75-year lease, both in China and Vietnam. And in Vietnam or China, foreigners cannot own more than 49% of telecommunications. We allow 100%. We have opened up really our economy. We are more liberal than Vietnam or China, yet they go get more FDI. They get more foreign direct investment. So you can see where the problem is. Power costs. We are too bureaucratic and our infrastructure is lagging behind. So that's why I think that must be something else. Why do they want to change the constitution when it has nothing to do with a low FDI? Well, I think the answer is there in their People's Initiative. It's not the economic provisions that are being changed. It's how to vote. They want the voting to change so that only they can propose amendments with upon the call of the speaker alone and the vote of the members of the House alone, even if the entire Senate will be against a proposed change, they can totally ignore the Senate. So they're changing the check and balance within Congress, and that is a revision that's not allowed in a People's Initiative. So it's very clear. They said low FDI is to be blamed on the Constitution. But they're not changing the provision of the Constitution, the economic provision. They're changing the political provision.
Thank you. That's quite clear. I want to wind down now, Justice, by asking you about one of your pet projects while you were in the Supreme Court, the e-library or electronic library of Supreme Court cases, no? I think you began it about 20 years ago, and it more recently became accessible to the public for free. No, why did you start this, and what is its value to the public?
Well, before I joined the Supreme Court, I had on my laptop all the decisions of the Supreme Court from 1901 to the present then, all the laws of the Philippines from 1901 to up to that time, and I had a search engine, and I could just type a letter, a word or a phrase, and I could get all of this instantly. And I said, a judge to be efficient must have this, because if you don't have that, can you just imagine you have to go through all the decisions? And you need an army of law clerks to do that, and we don't have that. So I said, okay, I will provide this facility to all the judges and all their law clerks. And so I put it up. I put that up. We bought scanners. We scanned all the decisions. So you can find there in the Supreme Court e-library now all decisions of the Supreme Court since 1901, more than a century ago, all the laws of the Philippines from the very beginning since 1901 up to now, and all the circulars, rules and regulations handed down by the Supreme Court. So it's all there. And all the judges now all over the country, we are an archipelago, and before we used to send mimeographs, copies of the decisions, and it was difficult to send these mimeograph copies. They're bulky, and the post office refused to carry them because they said it's not mail, it's cargo. And we had this running problem with the post office. They said, we will not carry that. That's cargo. That's not mail. So, you know, we even came out with a resolution directing them, mandating them to carry it. But the postman, he will just throw away those bulky decisions and will not deliver. And that was our problem. The judges had no copies of our recent decisions. So what we did, because of the internet, we gave them access. And also, on a quarterly basis, we sent them CDs, compact disc of the recent decisions. So the postmen were very happy because they were just carrying the disc instead of a pile of cargo paper. So that's how all the judges all over the country could instantly get the latest decisions of the Supreme Court. And now we opened that just before I retired. We opened that to the public. So all the law schools, all the law students, they have access to this already. And the public also has access to that.
So, I mean, it's useful not just for judges, but for any researchers, you know, law students or anyone needing to look up laws and regulations of the country, you know. So on that note, we want to thank you, Justice Carpio, for this important service of providing, you know, those documents that, you know, that heritage of laws to the public, but also for shedding all this light about our territorial issues. And thank you for spending this time with us, former Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. Maraming salamat po at mabuhay po kayo.
Thank you, Howie. Thank you to our viewers for listening, for watching. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, Podmates. Download this episode so you can listen to it anytime, anywhere. Stay safe, Podmates.